Hi, this is Dr. Tina Webb, and you are listening to the Coping Season Podcast, the show that discusses mental and emotional wellness to help Black men and Black women begin to heal and cope with the effects of emotional distress. Although I am a licensed clinical social worker, please note that this podcast is not meant to be used as a substitute for a relationship with a licensed therapist. Get ready to laugh, think, and be entertained. It's time to cope. Let's get started. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I am so glad to be back with you all today. And we've got a lot to talk about. So let's just get right into it. Earlier this week, a woman named Sabrina Peterson, who was once close friends with T.I. and Tiny. And, you know, T.I. is a rapper. Tiny was once in the group Escape. And they also had a TV show together, Tiny and T.I. They are a married couple and they had a show called The Family Hustle. And it was about them and their kids and their friends. Hopefully some of you remember. I'm just trying to paint a picture of who they are in case some of you don't know who T.I. and Tiny are. So fast forward to earlier this week, Sabrina, she went on Instagram and she shared that T.I. pointed a gun at her at a children's birthday party in 2009. She said that she had been arguing or fighting or something with T.I.'s assistant, and then T.I. pointed a gun at her. He started threatening her. He started saying, like, you know, bitch, I'll kill you. And over again, he was saying that and pointing the gun at her. So she wrote on Instagram and she said, you know, T.I., you put a gun to my head in front of children and I never called the police on you. But for years, you've painted me as a villain. Now, Sabrina said after the incident, she and Tiny, they stayed cordial with each other. They would see each other at events like baby showers and funerals, but they were distant. Now, after Sabrina made these allegations that T.I. pointed a gun at her, Tiny went on social media and she said that she was confused about why these allegations were coming out now. And Tiny defended her husband and she started posting pictures from 2019 of T.I. with Sabrina's kids. And she screenshotted like Sabrina praising T.I. and saying good things about him. And so Tiny said, you know, hold up. So you want your abuser to train your sons? You were just calling him uncle 2 years ago. Now, when did you say my husband assaulted you? Did you change your mind or did you change it back? What's up with you today? You know, I'm confused. She told her to stop harassing her family. She said, you strange, please get help, but just leave us alone. So after that, Sabrina addressed Tiny on Instagram again. And then Sabrina went on Instagram Live and she started talking about trauma and dealing with trauma as a Black woman. Also, I just want to let you know, Sabrina Peterson, she's a businesswoman. She also has like this webinar series called Glam University, and she helps women to launch their own CBD business. So a lot of people right now have been wondering, why is she coming out with all of this now? And she said that this trauma has been affecting her for years. She just put it away and she tried to go on, not realizing how traumatic it was for her. And she didn't realize how much it weighed on her over the years. She said that it played over and over in her mind over the years, just remembering the cold gun, remembering him saying, you know, bitch, I'll kill you, over and over. She said that she just wants to heal. And that T.I., you know, he's been in the news a lot lately. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but like the mayor, Keisha Lance Bottoms of Atlanta, she has been having T.I. like do press conferences with her. He's been speaking up about violence. He's been like being used as a voice of reason to the people of Atlanta or to Black people. And Sabrina, she said that she's been getting tired of like officials holding him up in this high regard when she knows the magnitude of what he's done to women and how he treats women. So this was just the beginning, y'all. So this all came out. And then after Sabrina came forward with these allegations, the floodgates just opened up. All of these women started coming forward. They started messaging her allegedly on Instagram and saying that T.I. and Tiny sexually abused them. Sabrina, she's saying that a woman have been getting in her DMs and it's like all these numerous women. I don't know how many, but she's been posting the DMs on her Instagram page. And many of the women are saying the same things. They're saying that T.I. and Tiny, they would recruit them through Instagram and get into their DMs, fly them out to where they are, Some of them are saying that T.I. and Tiny were using other women to recruit women for them and that they were involved in like sex trafficking. So a lot is just coming out. They are saying that T.I. and Tiny as a couple, they coerced them into taking drugs. They coerced them into having sex with them, to taking off their clothes, that they would have sex with them and then they would make them have sex with other people who were present. Some women are saying that they lost consciousness and they were unconscious and T.I. and Tiny were passing them off to their friends and people were having sex with them while they were just unconscious, not even awake. And then they would wake up and they don't even remember what happened the night before. So just a lot of sexual allegations are being made. And like I said, there are dozens and dozens of women who are anonymously coming forward. We don't know, like, you know, who the women are. The women are coming forward and coming to the Lady Sabrina. So there are a lot of concerns as far as the authenticity of these messages, but the allegations are out there now. Like I said, there are dozens of women who have allegedly come forward. And of course, T.I. and Tiny have denied the allegations. They're saying that the allegations are egregious, that they are appalling, that they've never done anything like this, what this person is saying, and that they've been having problems with Sabrina for over a decade. And they are saying if she doesn't stop with these allegations, they're going to take legal action against her. Now, in the midst of all of these sexual allegations, a lot of T.I. and Tiny's friends have been trying to come forward and they've been posting videos on social media in support of T.I. and Tiny. Some of the people that are posting videos, the things that they're saying is not helping the case, because now it's come out that, yes, T.I. and Tiny have been having threesomes in their marriage. They do involve other women and have other people in their bedroom. So more fuel is just being added to the fire. And then their friend, Shekinah, I don't even know if she's still friends with them, because the way that she's speaking on social media, I'm like, what kind of friend is this? Because she's just making it worse and worse. Now she's backpedaling because she said a lot of things about the Lady Sabrina. And now she's backpedaling and she's saying, oh, I don't know anything about T.I. and Tiny and what they do in their bedroom. I've never seen them like that in that light. She's just saying all this extra stuff, which, like I said, is adding more fuel to the fire. So on today's segment of Ask Dr. Tina, I want to read a quote that T.I. made. He made a video on Instagram regarding these allegations, and I just want to read what he said. T.I. stated, and I quote, "I want to say that my wife is a beautiful person with an amazing spirit and a kind heart. She's a devoted mother and she has a humble soul. She don't deserve it. What we not gonna do is open up the door to my bedroom. Whatever we have done has been done with consensual adults who into what we into and like what we like. If we want something, we know exactly where to go get it. We've never forced anybody. We've never drugged anybody against their will. We've never held anybody against their will. We've never made anybody do anything. We never sexually trafficked anything." And that's what T.I. had to say. You know, I don't know what to think. I don't know what to believe. As much as I love T.I. and Tiny, from what I can see, I'm not taking any sides here. Like I say, we never know what's being done in the dark and things come to light. I don't know. And at the same time, I feel for the victims as well. So I just hope that the truth will come out, whatever the truth is, so everyone can get justice and healing in whatever form that comes in. We've been hearing a lot about protecting Black women lately. We've been hearing a lot about the Me Too movement. We see people speaking out about what's being done to them. You hear people saying, you know, oh, he got Me Too'd, or they're trying to R. Kelly him. We hear people referencing Bill Cosby and talking about what's going on with him. Now, if we look at the statistics about women and sexual violence in the United States, it's mind blowing. It's staggering. 1 in 3 women are victims of sexual violence. And for Black women, it's even higher. Black women are disproportionately impacted when we talk about sexual abuse, sexual assault, sexual violence. It happens all too often and it goes underreported. It goes unreported. It goes underaddressed. Over 18% of Black women will be sexually assaulted in her lifetime. And that's just the women that we know. That's just the ones who have reported it. There are a lot of women who do not report sexual violence, sexual abuse, sexual assault. We're going to talk about terms in a little bit. So the number is even higher. Oftentimes in the Black community, in Black families, we don't talk about sexual abuse. Oftentimes in our community, we protect the perpetrators and the predators that may have harmed us. And the reason why is possibly because of this theory called cultural betrayal trauma theory by Dr. Jennifer Gomez. And she says that there is a unique harm that we face as Black people when our perpetrators are Black as well. In the Black community, in our culture, and in other minority cultures too, they have the same thing. We have what she calls intercultural trust. And that makes up like our love, the loyalty, the attachment, the connection, the responsibility and solidarity that we have to each other in the Black community. We have all of these things that protects us from everyone else, that protects us from a hostile society. But when someone within our group, within the Black community, let's say a Black perpetrator harming a Black victim, that's a violation of our intercultural trust. It's what they call cultural betrayal. Someone betrayed our trust. Someone in the Black community betrayed our trust and they hurt one of their own. But yet we still oftentimes will protect that person. We protect our predators and our perpetrators, and we put pressure on victims to protect them as well. That's why sometimes in the Black community, you will hear people say like, oh, he can lose it all. You know, oh, he has a family. You know, you better be sure. Or, oh, that boy is young. You better be sure because prison is nothing to play with. You can't just be saying stuff. And oftentimes we blame the victim. You know, they'll say, well, you know, she's fast. Oh, you know, she be with so many men all the time. Look at how she dresses. Look at how she acts. These are just a few examples, but there's a lot more. You've heard them before. But the basic mandate is to not betray your race. And we see it all the time. We see it with O.J. Simpson. People cheered. Black people cheered when he got off for murder. But behind closed doors, you will hear some of those same Black people that cheered for him being let off. They'll say, you know, yeah, I think he really killed her. But basically, it's okay that he got off because he beat the system. He was protected from society's hostile ways. And we were there to love and support and be connected with him, even though we know that he may have done wrong. The same thing with R. Kelly. For years, these allegations have been out there that he has been, you know, having sex with underage girls. But we protected him and we blamed the girls, calling them fast and whatever else. And just so many more people in your community. You know what they said about your neighbors and about different people that you may have known growing up. And we punish people for speaking out about the trauma that they've endured at the hands of other Black people. We see it with snitching. We will cancel. We will turn our back on people. We will silence the victim because of them speaking their truth or reporting something horrific that another Black person has done to them or their family. We call it snitching. The same thing that's happening right now. You know, that TikTok song that's gone viral. Corvette, Corvette, hop into something, something jet like that. That song. I don't even know who sings it, but apparently, you know, that song blew up and people have been dancing to it and it's just been all over the place. And some rappers, Uzi Vert and someone else, they got on the remix of it and they were on the song and letting it get popular and stuff. And then it comes out that the guy who sings the song when he was a teenager, and I don't know if I have this completely right, but this is what I have read, is that when he was a teen, he was like 13 years old, someone killed his brother in front of him and his mother. And so him and his mother went to the police department to report it. So now that paperwork has come to the light and it shows that when he was 13 years old, he reported the person who killed his brother. He reported what he saw and what happened to him and his mother. And now these rappers, they have come out and they're saying that they want their verse off of his song. They want to cancel him. They're saying that he's a snitch. He's a snitch. We can't mess with snitches. And it's like you are silencing a victim. Someone killed his brother in front of him and his mother, and you're telling him to go against his mother. If his mother tells him, yes, we are going to say what we saw and report this, he's supposed to tell his mama, no, I can't do that. That's snitching. You know, it's just all backwards. It's just all messed up. We can't report something horrific that another Black person has done to us because that's called snitching. That's called we broke the code. We are a community of people with survivors and perpetrators of violence, of sexual assault, sexual abuse, rape, sexual violence, sexual trauma, and we are walking around in our community. Some of us have found healing. Some of us have not. Some of us have found justice. Some have not. Many of us have a generational inheritance of sexual abuse that's been passed down throughout the family, generation after generation, experiencing the same trauma, and no one talks about it. We are silent and we are silenced, and that is what protects the predators and the perpetrators of sexual abuse in our community. Nobody wants to talk about sexual abuse. And when we don't talk about it, when we don't point out the people who have done it or the things that have happened because we're silenced by the community, because we're blamed or we feel shame or all of these things, that's when the predators and the perpetrators get away and they continue to do what they're doing over and over and over to other people in the family, to other people in the community. Like I said, nobody wants to talk about sexual abuse, but we have to talk about it. We have to talk about it so that we can get out of this cruel cycle of pain and we can heal. So on today's episode, I want to take a deeper dive into sexual abuse in the Black community. Now, so far, you've heard me mention like sexual abuse, sexual assault, sexual trauma, sexual violence. I've mentioned rape. I've mentioned different terms. Now, it's important to know what these terms mean. There are so many different topics that we can touch on. On today's episode, I want to focus on sexual abuse, but I want to explain to you what these other terms are because we're going to talk about them in other episodes down the line. Now, when we talk about sexual abuse has been called molestation. And what happens is with sexual abuse, it can range from just a variety of different things, from touching a victim in a sexual manner, to forcing a victim to touch the perpetrator in a sexual manner, to making the victim look at sexual body parts or to watch porn or look at sexual activity. And it can happen to men. It can happen to women. It can happen to children. It's something that is done without consent. Now, when we talk about children, there is no such thing as consent. Any sexual abuse of a minor is a crime. It is a criminal act. It is punishable by the law. There is no such thing as consent. Children cannot consent to having sex, to any sexual behavior or anything. And just to be even more clear, sexual abuse is an act of violence. It is an act of violence. It doesn't come from someone having an uncontrollable sex drive. I can't help myself. No. Sexual abuse is the result of someone making a choice. They chose to abuse. They chose to deliberately commit a crime against another person. That's what sexual abuse is. It's any unwanted sexual activity. The perpetrators might use force. They might make threats, or they take advantage of the victims who are not able to give consent. Like I said, a child or someone who might be disabled. Most victims and perpetrators of sexual abuse know each other. There is grooming that takes place. There is deliberate actions that take place that this person chooses to do so that they can sexually abuse someone. So it is never the victim's fault, the survivor's fault, that this happened to them. And I say victim or I say survivor, it just depends. You know, for legal aspects, when you go to court, they have to have a person that's called a victim. But people don't like to say the term victim because they feel like it gives the perpetrator, the predator, all of the power. So oftentimes we use the term, the new term to use is survivor, but it just depends also too on the person. You got to ask them what they prefer to be called. Now, when we talk about rape, sexual assault, sexual violence, you hear those terms being used interchangeably, and it can be confusing. But what's important to know is that rape is a specific criminal act. And then the term sexual violence it can include rape. So sexual violence describes like a range of criminal acts that are sexual in nature. So it can be like unwanted touching and kissing to unwanted rubbing, groping, forcing the victim to touch the perpetrator in sexual ways. And rape is a criminal act that's included in sexual assault. So that's why you'll hear people say sexual assault, or they might say rape, because like I said, rape is included in sexual assault. Now, just to clarify what rape is, the FBI defines rape as penetration. It doesn't matter how slight the penetration is. Any penetration of the vagina, the anus, with any body part of someone else's or an object, or any oral penetration of the sex organ from another person without the consent of the person, that is considered rape. And rape can happen to anyone, male or female. It can happen to both. And what happens is, this is also rape. If a perpetrator is ignoring verbal resistance, if you're saying no, if you're saying stop, if you say I don't want to, or they overpower you with like their physical resistance, like they're holding you down so that you can't move, that is rape. If you are drunk, if you're unconscious, if you are asleep, or if you're mentally and physically incapacitated in any way, and you're not able to give consent and someone penetrates you, that is rape. If someone threatens, uses force, or they use a weapon against another person and they penetrate them, that is rape. All of these examples that I just gave puts a person in a position to where they are not able to make an autonomous decision about what happens to their body. And when someone takes advantage of a person who is in one of these states that I just mentioned, that is rape. They are ignoring consent. They are removing consent. And it doesn't matter if you're married to the person, that is still considered rape. Another thing to know is that a perpetrator, they can't defend themselves against charges of rape by saying, oh, I was drunk too. We were both drunk. No. It's still considered rape, and that is not a defense. Now, when we talk about sexual violence is like a more broad term than sexual assault. Sexual violence, it includes acts like that the law might not see as criminal, but they are still very harmful and very traumatic. Like when someone uses false promises to make you have sex with them, or they keep pressuring you for sex, or like any abusive comments or threatening your reputation to try to make you have sex with them. That's all included in sexual violence. It's harmful. It's traumatic. It's psychologically damaging to people. Also, sexual violence can include catcalls. You know, hey, baby. Yeah, what's up? Come here. You know, all of that. Anything, catcalls, whistles, anything that can make women feel objectified and victimized can be considered sexual violence. It also includes like if someone sends naked pictures of you to someone else, if someone is like posting nude pictures of you on social media, any exposure of like your genitalia, or they let other people see you naked, or if they're letting other people watch you during sex, or if someone else is watching you during sex and you don't know, if they're videotaping you, all of that is considered sexual violence. Also, too, depending on what state you live in, the laws about sexual assault, rape, violence, sexual abuse, they will be different possibly just depending on your state. So it's important to just look up all these terms and see what the law is in your state. Another reason that I wanted to talk about sexual abuse today is because outside of the initial shock and the fear and the disbelief that people feel after sexual abuse has occurred, there are often long-term symptoms that people have to deal with. There is often long-term psychological and emotional distress. People are often having to deal with anxiety, depression, PTSD. They face fear and just a legacy of trauma. Now, when we talk about the sexual abuse that Black women have to face, it's important to understand the history of stereotypes and misrepresentations of the Black woman that helps to fuel and perpetrate these crimes against Black women today. Black women have been depicted as hypersexualized since the early 1400s, since the time of slavery. the myth that Black women are sexually like insatiable, we don't get enough, we have this huge sexual desire and this huge sexual appetite, that was used to justify enslavement. It was used to justify raping us, forcing us to make babies, and other forms of like sexual coercion since the time of slavery. And then this same depiction of the Black woman, it replays itself over and over. Like back in the day, it led to even further dehumanization by making it culturally acceptable for Europeans, for white men, to sexually abuse Black women and American Indian women. And after the abolishment of slavery too, you know, we entered into the Jim Crow era, and that same rhetoric, those same stereotypes, that same depiction of the Black woman, it continued to uplift the myth that Black women are sexual objects, that we are not full human beings. And so during that time, the culture of rape and sexual abuse, it just continued. All throughout the 20th century, Black women have been sexually abused and assaulted by men of all races, and they didn't get punished for it. Nothing happened to them. They went on freely about their business. The perpetrators of those crimes went unpunished. And we see it in movies all the time. One of my favorite movies, The Color Purple. But there are scenes of rape. Rape of young girls by grown men. You know, in 1944, there was a Black woman named Recy Taylor. She was abducted by six white men while she was walking home from church, and they raped her at gunpoint. Now, her case was tried by an all-white, all-male jury, and despite them having physical evidence, despite there being multiple witnesses that said she got abducted and they saw it happen, they dismissed the case. Now, this has happened to countless Black men, countless Black women, and we still face it today. You know, sexual abuse, sexual violence, sexual assault in the Black community, especially among Black women. It's often dismissed or it's ignored. And it all goes back to the fact that Black women are stereotyped as being hypersexualized. That stereotype threatens our safety. It puts us in danger. All of these stereotypes and misrepresentations of the Black woman seek to devalue and dehumanize us. If you watch or listen to the episode Coping with Being the Most Disrespected and Unprotected like Kamala Harris, check out that episode and I talk about the different stereotypes, the sapphire, the strong Black woman, the angry Black woman, the mammy. All of these stereotypes, like I said, dehumanize us, they devalue us, and that's why celebrities who are committing egregious crimes against Black women, and I'm not talking about T.I. and Tiny, I'm talking about anyone who is a public figure, who is a celebrity that we look up to in the community. We have different sports figures, you know, rappers, singers, athletes, young, old, it doesn't matter what they are. A Black woman will come out, they will speak their truth, they will accuse this person of rape or sexual assault or some kind of sexual misconduct. And what do? We go and look up all of her background and find out everything about this girl and try to tear her down so that we can uphold this figure, this representation of success. And it's not right. Now, don't get me wrong. Do people lie sometimes? Yes, they do. But everybody is not lying. In fact, research has shown that 91% of Black women who are sexually assaulted, they are being assaulted by a Black man. And 75% of those attacks are by men that they know. So it's by family members, friends, people that they trust, people in the church, people who are trusted advisors to them, people who are their neighbors, people who they are hanging out with in social settings on a regular basis, their husbands, people who they're close to. People that they know. It's also important to know that when Black women report crimes of sexual assault or violence, we are less likely to be believed than white women are. And that also has an impact on the number of Black women who actually report sexual assault. That deters us from reporting it because you feel like no one's going to believe you. So for every 15 Black women who are raped, only one out of the 15 will report that she was assaulted. That is a huge number. We are silent. We're silent out of the fear that we won't be protected. The fear that we won't be protected by the law. We won't be protected by our community. Just look at Megan Thee Stallion. She got shot. She's the victim. And yet people are asking, well, what did she do? She must have been beating him up or something. She must have did something. And we got to stop doing that. You know, you can think it. Maybe you want to think it, but let's not say it so much out loud and spread it around, because then that prevents other people from speaking out about things that happen to them, because they're looking at that like, oh, man, look at what they're saying about her. If I said what happened to me, I know nobody's going to believe me. So I'm just going to suffer in silence. And we have to stop that. We have to stop this vicious cycle. It's also important to know that as Black women, we are less likely to seek out help from the legal system or from law enforcement, because there's just a history. We all know that there is a history between the Black community and law enforcement. There's a history of mistrust, neglect, abuse, accusations, false imprisonment, mass incarceration, police brutality, unfair drug policies, over-policing of our neighborhoods, and just unfair treatment between the Black community and law enforcement. So how can we feel safe and feel protected by the justice system, by law enforcement, when they continue to oppress and discriminate against us? We're continually seeing videos of police brutality, of killing unarmed Black men and women, pepper spraying little girls who are suicidal, going and responding to calls of suicide and killing the person on their own property, arresting somebody on their own porch. You know, the list goes on and on and on. How can we feel safe? How can we trust a system that is still oppressing and discriminating against us? How can Black women trust law enforcement or the legal system to protect us? Now, when it comes down to the Black community, okay, don't get mad. I'm gonna get on us a little bit, because we have to start talking about these things so that we can change, so that we can heal, so that we can transform. When it comes to the Black community, Black women are often pressured into showing solidarity with the Black race, even though our perpetrators are also Black men. Now, I'm going into this because I want us to understand some of the psychological constructs as to what happens in the mind or what's happening in the Black community when it comes down to reporting sexual assault and sexual abuse. Oftentimes, when Black women are faced with reporting their sexual assault or their sexual abuse, when they're put in that position to have to report something that was done to them by someone from the Black community, Black women are often faced unfairly with the notion that they're betraying a member of their own community. They're betraying a member of their own race by reporting what this person did to them. The idea of like unification, of solidarity, of protecting the Black man, that has been ingrained and reinforced in the Black woman for years and years, for decades. And these same ideals of like betraying our race and protecting the Black man, all of these same ideals contribute to the reasons why Tarana Burke, the founder of the hashtag MeToo movement, she is getting death threats from Black men. She is betraying her community by speaking out about sexual assault and sexual violence. So do you see the problem in that? It's an unfair burden for anyone to have to bear just for speaking the truth, for speaking up against evil people. Now, it's important to know that the psychological impact of sexual abuse and sexual assault, it varies from person to person. Like a child who is sexually abused, or they might not realize that they were assaulted for years. They may not realize what happened to them. An adult victim, they might also be like, say they got date raped. They might try to convince themselves that it was consensual just as a way to cope and deal with it, or they may not even realize that they were raped, and they may realize later what really happened to them. Oftentimes, when people are attacked by somebody that they know in life, they will go on maybe and have ongoing trust issues. It's going to be very difficult to trust people because your trust was violated by somebody that you trusted. But then that varies person to person as well. Someone else could have a totally different experience. And then there are some people who have been assaulted by a stranger. They go on oftentimes to have like a lot of fear. They experience a lot of fear in their life, a lot of apprehension. But like I said, those experiences vary as well, just depending on the person. There is no timeline. There's no timeline of when you should feel better, of healing. There is no timeline. Whatever a person is feeling, whatever you're feeling is okay. Everybody's experience is going to be different. It's going to be unique. Oftentimes, people will feel feelings of shame. They feel confusion. They feel guilt. All of that is common. You know, oftentimes people will feel angry or they'll feel really bad about themselves and they'll be thinking like, you know, why didn't I stop this from happening? Why didn't I stop the assault? What could I have done? They might worry about too what other people might think about them if they find out what happened to them. They also blame themselves oftentimes, but those are all false thoughts. That's something that therapy can help with because it's not your fault. It's never the victim's fault. Another thing that happens after someone is assaulted or abused is that they will often experience flashbacks where they keep replaying the assault over and over in their minds, over and over again. And that can also lead to increased feelings of anxiety because, like I mentioned earlier, oftentimes people who survive sexual assault, sexual abuse, they face mental health issues like depression, PTSD, substance use disorders. They might start using drugs, alcohol to cope. They develop eating disorders oftentimes, anxiety disorders. And for those who have been assaulted multiple times, who have been abused multiple times, they are at an even higher risk for mental health issues. And that's why it's important to have support, to have people around you who are supportive. When you get negative reactions from friends and family members, that can also increase the risk of mental health issues, especially if your family and friends and the people that you love don't believe you. If you're being blamed, that can also create more psychological trauma. You know, and we hear about this in the Black community. Well, I hear about it time and time again from adults. And they're telling me, you know, I was abused as a kid by my mother's boyfriend. I was abused by my father. I told my mother and she didn't believe me. She got mad at me. It happens more often than it should. Or the situation could be that there's a group of friends and one of the friends assaults one of the other friends in the group. When the friend goes to tell the other friends what this person did to them, the friends don't believe him or her. Oh, I've been knowing him for so long, he wouldn't do something like that. They jump to the defense of the perpetrator. And we got to stop doing that. As much as you might know a person, as much as you might love a person, you don't know what that person is capable of. We just don't know. We don't know what might be going through their mind. We don't know when or if they might ever make a choice to harm somebody else, to sexually abuse, to sexually assault somebody else. We just don't know. And that's why it's important to talk about different myths regarding sexual assault, because some people say, oh, you can spot a rapist by the way he looks or by the way he acts. And that is not true. Many people can come off as friendly. They come off as being non-threatening, very charming, very handsome, very beautiful, whatever the case may be. They look and they act completely normal. And yet they are the same people who may rape, sexually assault, or sexually abuse someone. They might be rich. They might be a celebrity. They might be in a position where they can have any man or any woman that they want. And yet they will still sexually abuse, sexually assault. They will rape someone. So you just never know. Another myth about sexual assault is that, you know, if you didn't fight back, you must have not thought it was that bad. It must have not been as bad as you think if you didn't fight back. And that's not true, because during a sexual assault, it is common for somebody to freeze. You go into fight, flight, or freeze mode. So it's either you're going to fight back and fight for your life, or you're going to freeze up, or you're going to try to get away. But you don't know what you're going to do unless you're in that situation. The mind and the body sometimes and the brain can just shut down when people go into shock, and it can make it very hard for them to move, to speak, or to think. So that is not a true statement. Another thing that people say sometimes is that, oh, you know, people are raped because of the way that they dressed. They asked for it by wearing that outfit or by the way that they act. And that is not true. Rape, sexual assault, it is a crime of opportunity. Rapists, they choose victims based on their vulnerability, not on how sexy they appear or how flirtatious they are. That doesn't have anything to do with it. Like I said, it's a crime of opportunity. You know, you meet somebody on a dating site and you let them come to your house the first time. And okay, you're alone. You don't know where they live. You don't know anything about them. That is a crime of opportunity that somebody might take advantage of and commit an act. Say you're out at the bar and you're drinking with your friends, and then it's time to leave and somebody comes up to you like, hey, how you doing? I've been watching you all night. I wanted to get to know you. Oh, you're leaving right now? Oh, maybe I can walk you to your car. And the person walks you to your car and nobody else is around, or it's dark, or whatever the situation. It is a crime of opportunity. They might take that opportunity. Another myth about sexual assault, about date rape in particular, is that people say date rape is a misunderstanding. Oh, it must have been a misunderstanding. And that comes about because date rapists, they often try to defend themselves by saying that, oh, I didn't know it. I'm sorry. I was drunk. It was a drunken mistake. Or, oh, it was miscommunication. I didn't mean anything. You know, I thought that you wanted it. I was drunk. You were drunk. And they will try to defend themselves by saying that it was a misunderstanding. But that's not true. Research shows that most of the date rapes that happen, the people who are date raping people, they are repeat offenders. They do this on a regular. So these men, they go out and they will target vulnerable women, vulnerable men. They target vulnerable people, and they will give you alcohol, keep buying drinks in order to get you drunk or get you in a position where they can rape you. Another myth is that people will say, oh, it's not rape if you had sex with that person before. Y'all had sex before? That's not rape, girl. And that is not true. Just because you may have previously consented to having sex with somebody, that doesn't give them rights to your body. So say you hung out with somebody, y'all had sex, and then the next day you come over, you have the right to say, no, that's not what we're doing. And they should respect that. If it's your spouse, if it's your boyfriend, if it's your lover, and they force you against your will, it's rape. It doesn't matter your previous sexual relationship with them. At any time, if you say no and they force you against your will, it is rape. It doesn't matter who they are. You know, there's just so many myths about sexual assault, and that makes it very confusing for people when they have been assaulted to even recognize what happened to them or to even seek support. So that's why I wanted to go over some of these myths. And then there's other things too. People say, sometimes people say, oh, you know, he or she was drunk. So how do they know that they didn't consent? Well, there you go right there. If you can't remember if you consented, basically they need to treat that as if it is not consensual at all, because that's what the law is going to see it as. So it doesn't matter if you're under the influence of alcohol or drugs when the assault occurred. If you are incapacitated, then that person should not be having sex with you if you did not say yes and you are alert and you're functioning at the level that you should be. Another thing people will say was like, oh, but did you see how she was flirting? She was doing all that flirting. What did she think was going to happen? Come on now. You're doing all of that. And that doesn't matter. You can flirt as much as you want to. That does not give anyone the right to touch your body, to kiss you, touch you, fondle you, have sex with you without your consent. It doesn't matter what you were doing. You are not to blame for what they chose to do. You know, like I mentioned, everyone's experience is going to be different. Oftentimes people feel shocked. They feel numb. They might be asking themselves, you know, did this really happen to me? Rape, sexual assault, sexual abuse. I mean, that happens to other people, not me. I don't even know how I feel right now. That's common. It's normal. There are just a lot of thoughts that come into someone's mind after they've been sexually assaulted, sexually abused. Oftentimes people will think to themselves, you know, nobody's going to want to be with me if they find out what happened to me. Nobody's going to want me now. You know, maybe they're afraid that their husband or their boyfriend or whoever their significant other is, they're not going to be with them, want to be with them anymore if they find out what happened. Or they're afraid that their partner is going to get very angry about what happened and they're going to try to go out there and retaliate. They're going to try to go kill the person or hurt the person. And now they have fear of their partner going to jail or getting hurt from trying to retaliate against this person who harmed them. So a lot of thoughts go into the mind after something traumatic like this happens. Oftentimes people are afraid to go out by themselves. They're afraid to be alone. They feel afraid that people won't believe them. Oftentimes people are worried about what other people will think. You know, I'm worried that other people will think that maybe I did something to bring this upon myself, that I did something to encourage the attack, or I'm afraid people think that I didn't do enough to prevent it, or I'm afraid to go to the police department to report it. They're not going to believe me. They're going to ask me a lot of questions. I just don't want to do it. I'm afraid that I waited too long to report what happened. Oh, this happened so long ago, they can't make a report now, or it's not going to matter. You know, do I need to go see a doctor? They don't know what the next steps or what they should do. And they think to themselves, you know, I don't want to have to relive this. So I'm not going to talk to anybody about it. I'm not going to report it or seek help. Or people are wondering, you know, should I tell my family? Should I tell somebody? I'm afraid that also this person might try to come after me again, especially if it's somebody that they know. So there is a deep fear there that this attacker will try to come after them again. Sometimes people feel like, you know, why did this happen to me? I feel so ashamed that this happened to me. Oftentimes, women worry that they may have gotten pregnant. Did I get pregnant by my attacker? You know, I'm worried that I might have contracted an STD. Will I ever feel normal again? These are all thoughts that could be going through a person's mind after something so devastating has happened to them. And as a way to cope, they might avoid doing certain things. They might stop going out and interacting with their friends. They might stop going out with people. Or they might not go to certain places or do certain things that remind them of the assault. And sometimes, too, they'll avoid just talking about it at all to anybody. And oftentimes, like I mentioned before, people will get into drinking, using drugs. They might gamble just to try to block out those feelings. I just want to say that sexual abuse, sexual assault is a very traumatic experience. It's something that is very painful, very hurtful to experience. And it's important to understand, though, that your behavior did not cause the sexual assault. The only person responsible is the person that harmed you, the person that assaulted you. I want you to know that you won't always feel the way that you feel right now. You can heal from this. It's really important for you to take care of yourself and to have support available. There are things that you can do to help deal with the impact of this trauma in your life. Let me tell you how. You know what time it is. It's time to cope. It's time to pull out our coping toolboxes. I'm going to give us some tools to toss in there today to help us cope with sexual abuse. Remember, we are going to be building this coping toolbox every time that we're together so that we can keep everything that we need that can help calm us during times of distress and help us to express how we feel in healthy ways. The first thing I want to say is that there is no timeline on healing or getting help, whether the abuse happened yesterday or it happened decades ago. A mental health professional can still help. Talking with somebody can still help. Therapy is like confidential. It's non-judgmental. It's a place where you can work through your feelings, through your challenges. It's a safe environment. It's a safe place. And that the therapist can help you just to deal with your feelings and then develop like some new coping skills and teach you how to manage your stress. So therapy can be very beneficial. And then there's just different types of therapy that you can do with your therapist. It just depends. I mean, there's cognitive behavioral therapy. There's eye movement, desensitization and reprocessing, which is a trauma therapy. EMDR is what it's called. There's supportive therapy. And choosing the right type of therapy, the therapy that's right for you, is something that you would talk about with your therapist, and you'll determine together what might be the best option for you. And then another option is group therapy. You can always do group therapy, and you can learn like a new skill to help deal with the trauma. And, you know, you can even go to group therapy after you've already done individual therapy for a while. It just depends on your comfort level. You'll discuss it with your therapist. You guys are a team. You've been holding on to all of this, working on it on your own, and now you don't have to be alone anymore. When you have a therapist, you have somebody there who is your support, and you're working as a team just to help you to overcome and go ahead and live your best life. And if you're not ready to talk to a therapist or a professional, you can always talk to a supportive friend, somebody that you trust, somebody who is calm, they're empathetic, they're supportive. Oftentimes, healing can take place when you start talking about what happened instead of avoiding it. You can also join a support group. There are a lot of support groups for sexual abuse survivors and for people who have survived rape or sexual assaults. So that's another option. And you can feel less alone, less isolated. Sometimes you can get a lot of just information from the groups to help you cope with the symptoms, to help you work towards recovery. And there are even online support groups that you can go to if you don't want to go to one in person. And as usual, the same tips that I always say: meditation, mindfulness, you can do yoga, maintaining a healthy diet, exercising, sleeping, all of those things can help with mental and emotional wellness. Now, if you have a loved one or a friend who has been a victim of sexual abuse, sexual assault, you want to just let them know that you still love them. Reassure them and let them know, like, hey, this was not your fault. There was nothing that they did or that they didn't do that makes them culpable in any way. Allow them just to open up at their own pace too. You don't want to rush them. For some people, it might be difficult for them to talk about what happened. And then for other people, they might need to talk about what the assault over and over and over again. And sometimes that can feel uncomfortable to like a friend or a family member. It can be frustrating, or you don't know what to say. But I would suggest that you don't force them to open up. And also, if they are opening up and they keep talking about it over and over and they keep talking about the past, don't stop them. Just let them talk. You know, if that's helping them by rehashing and talking about the past or saying things over and over, just let them do it. Let them know that you're here to support them. You're here to listen. You're here whenever they want to talk. And that can be helpful to them as well. But if you feel like it's too much, you don't know what to say, you don't know how to handle it, maybe try to encourage your loved one or your friend to seek professional help so that they can talk to somebody. But you don't want to pressure them to do it. You can just make a suggestion. You can say, oh, I've heard about this place here, or I looked this place up. These are a couple places for you, or something. And just let them decide. After someone has been sexually abused or sexually assaulted, it is important to show empathy, try to put yourself in their shoes, but also you want to limit your physical intimacy and contact with the person. Oftentimes, they will shy away from physical touch, but at the same time, it's important that they feel close to people emotionally. So try to express like your affection verbally, you know, let them know, I love you. I'm here for you. I'm listening to you. You are amazing. You know, all the things, whatever you can say to them verbally, but you don't want to like just grab them and hug them or grab their hands or touch them. You want to ask them, you know, is it okay if I hug you? Is it okay if I touch you? You know, if you are a spouse or you're like a sexual partner of that person, it's important to understand that they might need time to gain like a sense of control over their life and their body again before they want to be sexually intimate. They might not desire any sexual intimacy and they don't want to be touched. So it's important to just be understanding and let them go through the process and just be patient, because when people are healing from trauma, the trauma of rape, trauma of sexual assault, the trauma of sexual abuse, it takes time. They are dealing with so much that you just don't see, like flashbacks and nightmares and just like fear, deep fear. So just try to be patient with them and as understanding as you can. Some words that might be encouraging to the person is like, you can let them know, you have my unconditional support. How can I be here for you during this time? You know, you can tell them, don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't give up. Take it day by day. you didn't do anything wrong. You can tell them you didn't deserve this. It wasn't your fault. You can say to them, I'm sorry that this happened to you. You're not alone. I believe you. Tell them, I believe you. People need to hear that sometimes. I care about you. Thank you for confiding in me. Listen, I'm here. If you want to talk about it, it's okay. And if you don't want to talk about it, then that's okay too. You can tell them that and let them know you have options. They might not know that they have options. And maybe that's something that you can provide them. Let them know that their feelings are valid. And you can say your feelings are valid. You are not a victim. You're a survivor. You survived. So obviously you did the right thing. I haven't heard from you for a few days and I just wanted to check in. Are you okay? You can also help them like just to regain a sense of control and a sense of their own power and autonomy by letting them know, hey, it's your decision if you want to file a police report, but I'll be with you every step of the way with whatever you decide, whatever way you decide to move forward, I'm here with you. You can also say to somebody, because you don't know what they're going through, so you don't want to say like, you know, I can only imagine what you're going through. Instead, you want to say, I can't imagine what you're going through. Would you be open to going to therapy or a support group for survivors of sexual assault? And that's a way that you can maybe get them to talk to someone. Something else you can say is, you know, would you like me to drive you to your therapy session? Do you want me to drive you to your support group? That is the kind of support that you can offer. Now, some things that might not be as helpful is if you keep asking them, what exactly happened? You know, you'll feel better if you talk about it. You shouldn't have been there by yourself. You know, what were you wearing? Was it too suggestive? You shouldn't have been drinking. You should have known better. Are you sure he assaulted you? Are you sure she assaulted you? He seems like such a nice person. I just can't see him doing that. I can't believe he did that. You don't want to say that. You don't want to tell them, you know, I think you're overreacting. You know, maybe he was drunk. Maybe she was drunk. You know, what if you're pregnant? I told you that person was no good. You know, you don't want to say to them, you don't want to normalize the fact that they got raped by saying, oh, it's pretty common for something like this to happen when somebody's on a date. This happens all the time to people. You don't want to say that to them. You don't want to tell anybody, you know, it's not rape if you were on a date. It's not rape if you're married to the person. Oftentimes people will question why the person didn't say something sooner, and they'll say it. Why didn't you say something sooner? Why didn't you run? Why didn't you scream? Why didn't you fight back? Or sometimes out of habit, you know, people say, you know, I understand exactly how you feel. But in this case, you don't want to say that to them because it's like, how do you understand exactly how I feel? Did this happen to you? So you definitely don't want to say that to them. And another thing that you don't want to say is sometimes people will say, you know, oh, they're trying to be helpful, but it doesn't validate the person's feelings when you say things like, oh, this happens to a lot of people. It's not that big of a deal. You'll be okay. You'll get past this. Oh, this happened to another friend of mine and he or she, they're fine now. They're doing good now. You know, people don't want to hear that when they're going through something. And also too, people say things like, you know, at least it wasn't worse. At least just try to avoid statements that start off with, at least you're still alive. At least this didn't happen. At least that didn't happen, because that makes it worse. People don't want to hear that. And oftentimes too, people will give advice to people and say, you know, if you want to heal, then you got to learn how to forgive and forget. Have you forgiven your attacker yet? You know, or telling them it's time to move on. Are you over it yet? Do you feel better yet? I can't believe you didn't go to the police right after it happened. You know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. You don't want to say things like that to them. They don't want to hear that. And then also too, telling them what they have to do. Oh, you have to file a police report. You have to go to therapy. You need to join a survivors group. You better tell your family what happened. You have to tell your mom what happened. You have to tell your husband what happened. You should take a self-defense class. You should move. I would move out of state if I was you. I would move to a different place. So you don't want to tell them things like that. Let them have control over their own life. People don't want to hear all of the opinions. So just be supportive and show that you care for them by listening and just going with the flow. What do you need me to do? I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do, but I'm here. I'm here. And sometimes that is just enough. If you or someone you know has been sexually abused, sexually assaulted, a victim of sexual violence, and they need someone to talk to, or you need someone to talk to, you need resources or anything, then please call RAINN, R-A-I-N-N, which is the, I think I spelled that wrong, R-A-I-N-N. That's right. RAINN. It is the National Sexual Assault Hotline. It's free. It's confidential. You can call 24 hours, 7 days a week. You can even go to their website at RAINN.org, R-A-I-N-N.org. And you can chat online and talk to them. You can call the number 800-656-HOPE, 800-656-HOPE, H-O-P-E. Lastly, I just want to say that the best way that we can help ourselves, we can help our community, we can help our family and our friends is if we educate ourselves. Because it's a little more difficult to help when we don't understand. Once we understand these topics and what's going on and how we can help, then we can do more. And I'm going to be doing more episodes as we go along. I'm going to do more episodes about sexual assault, about sexual abuse. We didn't talk about childhood sexual abuse. Today, I kind of just wanted to focus on sexual assault to some extent. But we have plenty of time, plenty of time, plenty of episodes, and plenty of healing together. We're going to get through this, y'all. Now, I want to read a quote from Rihanna. Rihanna came out with a song some years ago called Man Down. And the song is, it was controversial because it is addressing rape, but it's also addressing like revenge on her part, but then also just to bring awareness about sexual assault. So something that she said when she did an interview about this song, Rihanna said, and I quote, "Rape is unfortunately happening all over the world and in our homes, and we continue to cover it up and pretend it doesn't happen. Boys and girls feel compelled to be embarrassed about it, and they hide it from everyone, including their teachers, their parents, and their friends. That only continues to empower the abusers." And that's what Rihanna had to say. I thought that this quote was very powerful and I just wanted to share it. I hope that this episode has been helpful, has been educational. I know I did not provide a lot of entertainment today. I wasn't busting out in song and doing all the things that I normally do, but maybe I can make it up to you right now. Because that's all the tools that I got. Go ahead and put those coping toolboxes away, y'all. It's time for one of my favorite parts of the show, movie therapy, music therapy. I would like to dedicate today's episode to the song called Man Down by Rihanna. And the song says, "I didn't mean to end his life. I know it wasn't right. I can't even sleep at night. Can't get it off my mind. I need to get out of sight before I end up behind bars. What started out as a simple altercation turned into a really sticky situation. Me just thinking on the time that I'm facing makes me wanna cry. 'Cause I didn't mean to hurt him. Could have been somebody's son. And I took his heart when I put out that gun. Rum pa pa pam, rum pa pa pam, rum pa pa pam. Man down, rum pa pa pam, rum pa pa pam, rum pa pa pam. Oh mama, 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 I just shot a man down in Central Station in front of a big old crowd. How oh, mama, 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 I just shot a man down. Wait a minute, I never thought I'd do it. Never thought I'd do it. Never thought I'd do it. Oh, gosh, whatever happened to me? Ever happened to me? Ever happened to me? Why did I pull the trigger, pull the trigger, pull the trigger, boom? And end the brother life so soon when me pull the trigger, pull it upon you. Somebody tell me what I'm gone, what I'm gonna do. Hey, rum-pa-pa-pum, 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 me say one man
down. Oh, me say, rum pa pa pum, rum pa pa pum, rum pa pa pum. Then me went downtown. So now I am a criminal, criminal, criminal. Oh, Lord have mercy. Now I am a criminal. Man down, tell the judge, please give me minimal. Run out of town on the dim, can't see me now. Oh, mama, 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 I just shot a man down in Central Station.
I believe that. I receive that. And I mean that. It's coping season, y'all. Thank you for joining me this week. I hope you all enjoyed this episode. You are not only listeners, you are my co-hosts, and we are a community. And I would love to hear from you. I'd love to hear your stories, experiences, and thoughts related to life issues, topics you'd like to hear discussed, or questions you'd like answered. Please visit me on the web at drtinaweb.com and click on Ask Dr. Tina to submit your questions, thoughts, and more. Tune in every Wednesday to hear my response. You can also check out the show notes as well as other contact information on the website. In the meantime and in between time, for additional updates, conversations, and more ways to interact, please connect with me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Dr. Tina Webb. That's DrTinaWebb. Feel free to share your thoughts from the show on social media using the hashtag Coping Season Podcast. Lastly, please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you are listening to help others find the show and learn to cope just like you. I appreciate and read every single review. Thank you so much for listening to the show and for spreading the word to all of your friends, family, and coworkers. I so appreciate it. Thank you, and I'll see you next week.